Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show. Today is all about the dreaded topic of public speaking. I know, it can be one of those things that can be so terrifying that it literally sends some people into panic attacks simply to get on stage in front of others. But public speaking, like anything else, is a skill that can be taught and can be acquired. On today's show, I speak with Brandon Kumasari, who helps individuals and organizations to become better conveyors of their message. We talk about how to craft good stories that get people from the very, very beginning and have them hanging on your every word until the very end. After that, I tell a story about my very first speech that I ever gave at the ripe old age of 10, and it was all about what every 10-year-old talks about, breast self-exams. After I tell you the story, I go through and describe how to effectively screen yourself at home for breast cancer using a monthly self-breast examination. Let's get to the show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast that helps you find fulfillment amidst chaos. On this show, I interview thought leaders, doctors, creatives, spiritual gurus, and game changers who inspire you to pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Brandon Kumasari is the founder of Master Talk, a YouTube channel he started to help other people around the world master the art of public speaking and communication. He coaches purpose-driven entrepreneurs on how to craft their message and more effectively share their ideas with the world. Today, he and I talk about communication, public speaking, and how to get into the mindset of how to be a better communicator. We challenge each other to a couple of different random word exercises that you can do at home to help you become a better speaker. Brandon Kumasari, welcome to the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Lindsay. It's great to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you. So you are the founder of Master Talk, and it is a YouTube channel that helps people all around the world master public speaking and communication. So tell us your backstory. What made you decide that the world needed yet another public speaking training platform, and what makes Master Talk different?
Yeah, of course, I'm happy to talk about that. So when I was in university, Lindsay, I used to do these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age would play football or soccer or baseball or any of those other sports, not something I was very much into. What I did instead is I applied that same competitive spirit to presentations. So suffice to say, in 3 years, I presented hundreds of times, coached dozens of people on communication, but the ambition was never to be a YouTuber or to start a coaching practice. I wanted to be an executive at a company. And so I got a job in corporate America, or I guess in my case, corporate Canada, so I'm based in Montreal. And then after I graduated, I just asked myself a simple question, which was, how do I make a difference in the world? How do I contribute more to society? And I realized that a lot of the communication information out there was really bad. You hear advice like, Lindsay, you should be yourself and get up on stage. And I just went, this is so vague. Yeah. So I started making videos in my basement, and then one thing led to another and Master Talk was born. So, and I guess to the second part of your question, what makes Master Talk so different? There's a couple of things I realized in the industry that were off. First one is a lot of the information that speech coaches were sharing was very academic and not very tangible. The second thing is that the quality of the information that was available for free for people who couldn't afford a speech coach was also really bad. And the reason is simple. Speech coaching is a highly lucrative industry. All you need is 10, 15 executive coaching clients. They'll always want to pay you every year. They'll pay you 10, 20 grand a package. And that's it. You're done, right? You work 10, 20 hours a week. You make multiple six figures. Why would you ever want to make free videos for YouTube. Whereas for me, the mission was much bigger than that. It was, wait a second, what about the 7-year-old girl in Massachusetts? What about the 14-year-old boy in London? What are they supposed to do? And that's when I had the passion for it.
So you started Master Talk so that you could make public speaking more accessible. And I so hear you, this whole thing of like, be yourself, go on stage, just be calm. But what are some actual tangible steps? Because lots of people struggle with public speaking. And let's take a step back. Why do you think people struggle to just go out on stage or to go on a video and just say something that's in their head or their heart?
Right. This is something I've asked myself a lot. And I get this question, you know, wherever you're from, whether you're from the States, whether you're from, you know, Europe or Asia. And I think the answer to this question, Lindsay, lies in the classroom. I mean, think about it. Whether, regardless of where you're from, 100% of all the presentations you've given, not in your case, but for most people, are mandatory. Mm. We don't wake up one morning and say, hey, Lindsay, you want to get breakfast and present all day? Nobody says that.
Right.
So we're in high school, we're in college, we're in university. Three things happen. One, we never get to pick the topic. And if we do, it's generally something we're not passionate about. Think about the Renaissance in history class that I thought was a fruit. Number two, students. Students don't care to listen to us, not because they don't care about us, but because they have to talk about Egypt in 10 minutes. So they're not paying attention to our presentations. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're learning, all of our presentation habits. Finally, number three, teachers are very well educated, very well intentioned, but also very stressed. If you have so many presentations to go through from each of your students, do you really have time to coach them? So year after year, presentation after presentation, we're taught to believe that public speaking, Lindsay, is a chore.
Mm.
At school, it's tied to a grade. If you're at work, it's tied to a result. And that's why we struggle with it. Not because we stink at public speaking, but because our perception of public speaking is that it's a bad thing for us rather than what it's supposed to be for, which is exactly what you're using it for, which is to make a difference and have this conversation.
So that brings up a really good point, which is oftentimes we are really crappy audience members, especially when people are on their phones, or if you're a student in a public speaking course and you're thinking more about your presentation than the person who is up on stage. And so what are some of your pet peeves when you're either on a stage or when you're coaching someone? And how do you, as the speaker, gently bring your audience? Because, you know, you can stand up on stage and be like, hey, is anybody even listening to me right now? And then all of a sudden your audience is like, this guy's totally a jerk. But how do you maintain that focus of your audience throughout a presentation?
Right. Here's my principle that I follow, because I don't like telling audience members what to do or saying, oh, you should check your phone or not check your phone. My point of view is be so good that they need to listen to you. Be so amazing that they just have to sit there and watch and listen to every single word that you say. Tony Robbins doesn't go into a seminar and say, hey, I want you all to pay attention to me for 16 hours. We just want to. Mm-hmm. So how do we create that environment for all of us? How do we all strive for a version of that? The way that we do this, and this is the easiest tip I'll share today that anyone can implement, it's called the puzzle method. So in many ways, Lindsay, public speaking is like a jigsaw puzzle. You know those 1,000-piece puzzles you kind of do with your family, especially now since COVID, you know, you can't really do anything outside. So if I asked you, Lindsay, if you're working on this puzzle with anybody in your family, which pieces would you start with first and why?
I mean, you're going to start with the corners, the edges. You're going to start like by grouping together all of the colors that look alike. You're going to try to put a pattern to the jumbled mess that is a 1,000-piece puzzle.
Absolutely. So now the question is, why don't we do that in public speaking?
Mm-hmm.
We have a presentation at work, in business, at school. So what do? We shove a bunch of content. In other words, we start with the middle. Mm. And then we get to that presentation. We get to the last slide of that presentation. And what does it sound? sounds something like this. Thanks. That's probably 97% of all the presentations I've seen in my life. So how do we fix this? Easy. Treat your presentations like a jigsaw puzzle. Start with the edges first. Present your introduction 50 times, not 3 times, not 5 times, 50 times. It's actually not that hard. It'll take you an hour, right? It's a minute introduction. Do the same thing with the conclusion. What's a great movie with a terrible ending? A terrible movie 50 times in 2 hours of practice, Lindsay. Whether you have a coach or not, doesn't really matter. At the end, you'll say, wow, I'm really good at this introduction thing. I'm really good at this conclusion thing. Now I can tackle the middle. But much like a jigsaw puzzle, why would you ever do a puzzle that's thousands of pieces alone, right? Do it with a friend. Do it somebody that you want to practice with. And together, master the public speaking puzzle.
So when you're crafting a presentation, you know, you say most people start kind of in the middle and then the presentation is kind of lackluster. And the problem is when your presentation, when the beginning of your presentation is lackluster, your audience is done. You have no chance of getting them back. And then the other problem people face is that they don't know how to end a presentation. So let's say that, you know, you know, many of our listeners, they love essential oils and they love talking to their friends and family about, let's say, lavender essential oil. They have this amazing turnaround where they were struggling to sleep and now they have an amazing bedtime routine surrounding essential oils. What steps would you recommend to someone to say, okay, if you want to talk to somebody about this, and especially if your end game is how do I get a sale? How do I encourage and inspire someone to say, dang it, I'm going to need some of that lavender essential oil because I too have these same struggles. Is there a pattern to what you present first, what's in the middle, and then how do you end?
Absolutely. It's just that pattern is going to change depending on who you are and who you're selling to. Because essential oils in that specific case has different uses. Some people use it for back pain. Other people use it for, you know, just feeling better or just, you know, different use cases. So the key is a simple framework people can follow is what ideas do I want to share with the world? Essential oils do this because, and then add your own spin to it. This was my journey, right? This is what happened. I had back pain. I had issues with so-and-so and such. And then because of this oil, it helped me in my life. And what happens is when you tell a story like that, there's many different ways of going about this. You don't have to do it that way. I'm just using that as an example. People are going to relate to you because they see themselves in your story. They're going to say, wow, wait a second. I have back pain issues too. Wait, you're saying you didn't go see a doctor? What's this oil thing? Let me try it out. Right? So that's the way I would think about it. It depends also if it's a formal presentation, like a keynote where you're speaking to 100 people, or if it's just an informal conversation. If it's an informal one, you don't need to end so formally or anything. You know, the end is really just the sale. But you want to make sure that you grab people's attention right away and you pique their interest. So that's why instead of a framework, what I'll recommend instead is be very audience obsessed. So here's something anyone in the essential oils industry can do. Let's say you have 7 clients right now. I recommend you get one-on-one, hour-long conversation with each of them just to understand their psychology, who they are, what do they dream about, what they aspire to be, and write down exactly the answers to this following question. Well, why did you buy the oils? Why do you care so much about it? How is it helping you? Your clients are just going to tell you everything you need to say to everyone else. Oh, well, Lindsay, you know, this happened to me. You're like, okay, perfect. It's back pain. Or perfect is this. And then through that database of information, then you can figure out how to tweak your messaging in a way that you attract more people like those people.
Where you actually look at what problems did people have? How did whatever you're talking to them about help to solve it? And how are they on the other side? Which is the critical part of any business venture is being sure that you know that there's a problem that needs to be solved. It needs to be solved because maybe you had it at some point in time or a lot of people have it. And you know that when this problem gets solved, that people's lives improve. So many people, when it comes to public speaking, they get so caught up in like the word of, I've got to give a speech, I've got to give a presentation, I've got to do this big formal thing. How do you deal with the anxiety, the nerves? How do you coach people to gather themselves before they end up on stage where they're like, and just not able to get the words out of their mouth?
Absolutely. So the way that I think about anxiety and fear, Lindsay, to keep it simple, is the following. The fear will always be there, even for someone like me who's a professional speaker. But the caveat is the fear always needs to lose to the message. Let's imagine the following scenario. Let's say there's a boxing match, and on one side of the ring, you have your fear. On the other side of the ring, you have your message. Fear is always going to be an opponent. They're always going to be in the ring. They're always somebody worth fighting. But you need to make sure that when the sport is over, when the match is finished, that your message wins in the end. And I'll give you the best example with me. I started Master Talk when I was 22 years old, and I started coaching C-level executives, which is CEOs, for those who don't know, when I was 23. Why would anyone listen to me? Why would anyone pay attention to what I had to say? So was I scared? Was I insecure? Absolutely. But how did I get through it?
Mm-hmm.
How did I get past that fear? Mm-hmm. I got past it when I understood the importance of my message. I remember I was 6 months into Master Talk. I still thought it was a stupid idea. I was like, I'm just going to be an executive at a company. And then I was talking to the 16-year-old girl before I was giving a workshop to them. And I said, what do you think about public speaking? And then she just went, she sort of started panicking in it. And I was just asking her calmly, what is it about public speaking that you're scared? She's like, I just don't want to do it. And she started freaking out. And I realized in that moment that nobody was serving her, that nobody was helping. She can't afford a speech coach. She's in high school.
Right.
But she has so many dreams and aspirations. Was to be a lawyer, was to be an executive, anything she wants to be. And I was the only person that could help her get from A to B.
Right.
And that's when I realized that executive coaching was a necessity, because I need those financial resources so I can make and pump out really good videos for people like her. And that's the key. Confidence stems from two areas. One is preparation. You know, you gotta know what you're talking about. That's easy. Second part is a belief system. It's not drinking a glass of water. It's not breathing. It's not power posing. It's what do you actually believe in? Why does this presentation even matter to begin with? And once you figure that part out by asking yourself this question, what does the world need you most to do right now and why? Then you'll know exactly what you're trying to do.
I think that that is so important, because when you actually believe that if I don't share this message, no one will, it becomes extremely easier to begin to speak and to just say, well, I don't know why, but this song has been put in my heart. This message has been put into my head. This feeling has been put into my gut. And if it doesn't come out, it doesn't get said. And that for me has gotten me into trouble a lot. You know, I was always a mouthy kid and always was talking too much and all of the things. And even to this day, people tell me, you know, you're such a natural speaker. And I'm like, no, I'm a very highly trained speaker. And I think that that is important too. Becoming a speaker doesn't happen overnight, just like learning how to type or learning how to play a sport or an instrument or writing a book. None of it happens overnight. It is a mastery and a skill set. So on one of our previous episodes, I went through and discussed some of the exercises that I learned through improvisation, through using tongue twisters to improve diction and clarity in speech. I've talked about how I worked hard to eliminate linker words, which I'm not always perfect at, but none of us are perfect. What are some of your favorite techniques, you know, what are some of the best exercises that people can incorporate into their preparation time to make them feel more at ease when they are on that stage?
Absolutely. So I'll give you three easy ones. One is what I call the repeatable presentation. My secret to mastering communication is very simple, is present the same presentation hundreds of times, mm-hmm. or at least 50 times. In most cases, you won't be able to do that because let's say you have a project or something that you need to just deliver for work. You can't really repeat that type of presentation. Mm-hmm. But there's always one topic in your life, and I've been able to find that for every single person I've met in the course of my life, that you can do multiple times. So for you, Lindsay, the example is actually really easy. It's your own podcast. You're always going to be working on it. You're always going to be promoting it. You're going to be speaking out at some conference or some event. So that's a repeatable thing. I mean, your podcast isn't going to change. But that's also true with Julia, who's an executive at a bank. Yeah, sure, she works 9 to 7 at a big conglomerate. But outside of work, she coaches kids on marketing for a mm-hmm. leadership program. So that presentation, she can still repeat because the topic stays the same, but the kids don't, because the kids always switch, right? Mm-hmm. New kids enter the program that she does pro bono. Same thing. Find that repeatable presentation and go deep on that presentation. Mm-hmm. And that ability for you to focus on the delivery of that presentation will make you better in all areas of communication. Exercise 2. Oh, please, did you want to go ahead?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that is so critical. And when you look at some of the best orators in the world, one of the key things that they do is practice their presentations over and over again. And I think that people sometimes get very, oh, this is stupid. You know, I'm standing in the mirror and I'm saying the same speech again. But do you think that it's easy to prattle off if somebody says, tell me about yourself, and you're at a party or you're on a podcast or you're on stage and you've been and you're just standing there and you're like, well, I was born here and I've got one brother and I've got this and I've got that, versus having a very compelling, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, and here's how we can engage together. It helps a lot just to say it over and over again. And so what was your next exercise that you love to offer to people?
And I love that you said that, by the way. I completely agree. Because what people need to realize, because I get that a lot from my clients, oh, Brent, I'm so boring presenting the same idea. Can we change topics? What I always say is that even if your idea remains the same, your audience doesn't.
Mm.
This is, you know, as you probably know, since you've been on many shows yourself, Lindsay, you know, the questions don't really change.
Nope.
Right? It's, well, Brendan, what, I'm not going to ask you what your favorite fruit is, so tell me about public speaking.
Yes.
But the way, the reason, in the same way you're an incredible speaker, the reason we're able to communicate so compellingly is because we've guested on hundreds of shows, right? When it was my first show, let's say this was my first one, Lindsay asked me, so Brendan, what do you think about Master? I was like, oh, well, I'm doing it in my mother's basement, so I'm not really sure how to, right? But then, right, a year and a half ago, but now it's like, now it's easier for me.
I cannot agree with this more. I remember one time I was on a tour in Japan and—
Whoa, that's so cool. Sorry.
Right? Yeah, it's really cool. I've been blessed. I've been to 8 different cities in Japan. On this particular tour, we did 7 cities, and Japanese businessmen don't play. And so you wake up, you give your presentation, you get on a plane, you go to the next city. You wake up, you give your presentation, you get on a train, you go to the next city. So I'm on my 7th day of wake up, give the exact same presentation. And because I'm in Japan, I'm hearing it in duplicate because I say a sentence and then my absolutely brilliant and wonderful translator, Yukiko, speaks it in Japanese. So I'm listening to it twice. I'm telling the same jokes, the same, you know, the same intonation, the same this, because the more that I can be similar, the easier it is for my translator to pick up on my speech patterns, my body language, what I'm actually trying to convey. And I remember that 7th morning, I was dragging and I did not at all want to go on stage and talk about the same dang stuff I had talked about for the past week. And the way that I got myself in the zone is I stopped and I reminded myself, I have given this presentation 6 times this week and I'm about to give it for a 7th. The audience has been waiting all of those 6 days, seeing pictures of me in all of these different four corners of this small island in the middle of the ocean for me to come and speak. If I don't show up and give my absolute best, then they're not going to invite me back. And then it comes down to like, well, do I want to come back to Japan and go on another speaking tour and convey the message that health and wellness is in your hands when you take control of it, you own it. You are empowered to own your own health. If I want to keep doing that, I better show up for this audience in front of me. And you are so right. Being a podcast guest, you know, I did 30 podcasts in 30 days a few months ago. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done because it's exactly what you said. It's the same questions over and over and over again. And sometimes you get confused. You're like, did I tell them that? Did I tell them that? And then I realized even if your audience hears it twice, it is still beneficial and helpful to them. And so have there been moments that you have had to dig deep? And where do you find that depth inside of yourself to say, no matter what, I will show up for this audience?
That is super cool. What an awesome example. I did not expect. Really caught me left-handed. That was awesome.
Thank you.
So let's take your example to the next level. I mean, not minus the Japan, that I can't beat. That was just awesome. But like for me, I batch all my interviews on the weekend. So forget 30 in a month, Lindsay, I do 10 a day, right? So let's say like I start at 8 a.m. just because I need to be efficient with my time. I'm saying I'm in the same way you're really busy with yours. So I go 1, 2, 3, 4. At the 7th one, I'm like, crap, I'm going to die. But what reminds me, what allows me to get back into this energy? Because I know there is somebody who's listening to me and you right now who has never heard me speak before and just heard the puzzle method for the first time and it blew their mind. Even if I don't see them, even if I don't know who they are. And that alone is enough for me to keep going. Because I know the world needs my message in the same way the world needs yours. And the more dinner conversation, I'd love to push that. The more you really talk to your audience one-on-one is when you understand what you're actually meant to do. Because they keep telling you, oh, you actually need to do it for this and this reason. You're like, really? Oh, is that why I'm supposed to be making content for people? Okay, that makes sense. So that would be a fun experience. So let's move on to exercise 2. Long pauses and stares. This is very simple. Okay, here's a secret a lot of speakers don't tell you is that we can pause forever and never make it look awkward. But obviously we don't have forever, so you have to take my word for it. So the key is you want to practice in a way so that when you pause for 2, 3, or 5 seconds in a speech, you're very comfortable pausing in a way that it doesn't burden you or makes you feel anxiety or anything. So the recommendation is actually very simple, is you don't really need a partner. You just need somebody in the house to do this or a friend nearby. Just go up to them, stare at them for 5 minutes, and don't say anything. It's very hard for most human beings to do that. I used to practice that all the time. And in my in-person workshops that I used to run, you know, 7 months, I do them virtually now. But what I used to do is I would pause for 5 minutes and just stare at each person individually, just to really make my point clear and just go. And they would all go, they would hold their breath, but I would just sit there like, stand up there like nothing was wrong. And that's practice. I was not born that way. So that's an easy trick.
It takes a lot of practice. I remember when I was on faculty, and adult learners are very different from elementary school learners all the way up to university level. You know, even in university, you're kind of like, am I getting my bang for my buck here? Do I really have to listen to this professor? And if my classroom got out of hand and they were just talking, and people weren't paying attention to me, or if I said, okay, guys, we're going to take a 5-minute break. I need you to talk amongst yourselves. And if I got back up there and said, okay, everybody, I need everybody's attention back now, and nobody listened, I'd park my back against the back wall and just stand there. And it sometimes is very challenging because our natural intuition is we do not think to listen. Sorry, we do not listen to understand and to reveal what's going on in that other person's psyche. We listen so that we can respond. So that, okay, all right, he's talking about these exercises and I got to have a good exercise example. We need to just stop and just be in the moment, in that one moment of listening. And I got to the point where sometimes I would stand there for 2.5, 3, 4 minutes before the classroom would recognize that I was asking them a question by my silence. And it is very difficult, but it is one of the things that I learned from another exercise that you, as we were preparing for this show, I found that you and I have an exercise that we do in common, which I would love to just play around with. And listeners, I would love for you to challenge yourself to do this too, because this is something I've been doing for 10, 15 years now, and you're going to hear me and Brendan do it next. So the exercise is so simple. You are going to throw out one word to me, and I'm going to give you a 1 to 2 minute presentation, and you're going to go first. I'm going to throw out one word to you, and you're going to give me a presentation as well. And this is something super simple that anyone can do. So are you ready for this? I got to think.
I'll be honest. I'm a bit nervous. You've probably spent your life giving me this word.
No, don't be nervous. Don't be nervous. I mean, there's nothing to be nervous about. It's just a podcast, you know?
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
So, okay. I was sitting a moment ago. I was like, what am I going to ask him about? And I was like trying to think of things that, you know, because sometimes when people do these, they try to either trip you up or give you something that you've never heard of or whatever. Or, you know, I could give you something that's very charged. I could be like, what do you think of the U.S. elections? But we won't go there. So talk to me for a couple of minutes about soda.
Let's do it.
Go to town. Soda, bring it.
As I walk into my house, I see so many things in the kitchen. Orange juice, apple juice, water, and different types of beverages that I can use to not just refresh my meal, but refresh my day. But there is one thing that will never be in my house, that will never sit on the doorstep of my house to the tables of my kitchen, and that is soda. Despite the way that marketing companies market soda, from Michael Jackson praising the love for Pepsi to the polar bears that shine, the golden cans of Coca-Cola, soda isn't that great for you. In fact, it is dangerous for you. Did you know that the same amount of sugar in a single can of Coke is the entire amount of sugar that you should be consuming in a day? Soda cans, despite the way that they're marketed, are not everything they say to be. Sure, Coca-Cola tells us to share happiness, but how can we share happiness if we don't live as long as we'd like to? If we don't live the healthiness of our lives. So I implore all of you to raise your glass and make sure that that glass has water in it. Not wine, not beer, not soda, but something that will allow you to raise that glass for longer periods of time. Which is exactly why in today's presentation, I'm going to talk about the negative impacts of soda and how the fizziness of the bubbles are a lot more construed than you might think.
I love it. I think, okay, listeners, what Brendan did so well right there was he actually told us a story. He told us a story, and that is all people want in a presentation. People do not want just like, Oh, you know, I love soda, and but it's got sugar in it. You know, he told us a story, and I was fully expecting, you know, there were so many twists and turns in the story as well. I was expecting you to be like, there's so many beverages when I walk into my home. I see water, I see juice, and then there's the soda. And you flipped it on its head a couple of times. And the other thing that I want our listeners to recognize and go back and listen if you need to, is the lack of linker words. And how to talk to us about linker words, and then I'll come back. I promise I'm going to take my turn in a minute. How do people eliminate linker words from their vocabulary? And start out by just telling us what linker words are, and then talk about how we eliminate them.
Filler words like ums and ahs, okay, perfect. I just called them differently, but yeah, sure. Let's go with winker slash filler words. So the key is the way that you get rid of them is actually a lot easier than you might think. As you get better with pauses and you're able to pause for excruciatingly periods of time, long periods, your ability to start replacing those filler words with silences improves dramatically. So I'll give you an example. Let's say we're in this podcast and I'm trying to get better as a speaker, and Lindsay asks me a question. What I'll do normally to buy time, as most of us do, is I'll do something like this. Yeah, that's a great question, Lindsay. Let me just, oh, right, and here's my answer. We use filler words for the most part to buy time to say something. But the secret of the best speakers in the world is that we still buy the same amount of time. We don't have an amazing memory. I'm not Jim Quick. I don't really know the next sentence in my book is. But we say nothing to buy time. So what you notice in the random word exercise, I actually had no idea what I was going to do with that exercise. But I've done it a lot, right? We'll get to that after you go ahead and do it. But the point I want to drive is that I was pausing a lot on purpose to figure out what I was going to say next. So I started in the kitchen, and I realized that in my kitchen, there's no soda. And I was like, why isn't there any soda in my kitchen? I was like, oh, right, because unhealthy. Let me just go on that. Let me just riff on that. And then I just kept going and going. And I don't even remember what I said. But the point is, the better you get at pauses, the better you get at pausing for long periods of time, the lower the number of the filler words or the winker words, as you described them, go down.
Yes, absolutely. When you can stop searching for what word can link my next idea together. And I know one of the things for me, I have been very good at getting rid of the ums, and I still say like, but you know, at some point you just have your vernacular and it's colloquialisms. It's not like we're in a formal interview setting, it's a podcast. One thing that I've had to work very hard on is at the end of my sentences, if I am lacking confidence that I have completed my idea, you'll hear me telling this great story and then it'll go, so. And that's how the story ends. And it's like, wah, 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 you know? So you have to figure out, where does your story begin? Where does the middle of it? And what you did so well, Brendan, a moment ago, was the middle of your story was all about conflict. It was about this internal battle of to drink soda or not to drink soda. Am I going to bring it into my house? Am I not? And we need that conflict, because with the conflict comes the resolution that gives us that great ending to a movie, as you mentioned a moment ago. So I'm ready for mine. I'm ready.
Don't worry, I won't give you something too hard.
I'm a little nervous. I haven't done this in years, and you just did it so expertly.
Oh, don't, we'll get into that as to why I was able to do that. But the word is pharmacy.
Back when I was in college, I thought I wanted to go to medical school. And I started taking a class where I was studying for my MCAT, which is the entrance exam that you have to take to get into medical school. And I quickly realized that I hated it and did not want any piece of taking this exam. Then I decided, okay, well, I'm not going to be a doctor. And I always knew that I wanted a doctorate of some kind, because I would be the first person in my family to accomplish that. It was always a big goal of mine. I decided I would get a doctorate in chemistry. Well, I was working in a chemistry lab, and one of the women that I was very close with came in one day and just said, "Lindsay, I don't think getting a doctorate in chemistry is right for you." And I thought, well, crap, now I have no life plan. What am I going to do with my life? And she's like, "Give me a few days, let me think about it, but just please don't apply to any doctoral programs in chemistry. It's not for you, it's not your personality, you're not gonna like the jobs that you can get, trust me, just please trust me on this." And I thought, well, okay, she's only asking me for a few days, so I'll give her a couple of days. A few days later, she comes in and she says, "I know what you should do. You should be a pharmacist." And for me, my whole goal, really, much more beyond getting the doctorate, was to leave Alabama. I wanted to go far and wide and see the world. So I get online and I start looking at schools of pharmacy, and I realize that there are some schools of pharmacy in California, which was just about as far away from Alabama as I could get. And I applied to pharmacy school, flew out, went to my interview, and my friend who took me to the interview was like, "Oh, that's so cute that she thinks she's going to get into this school," because of course I wasn't messing around. I was like, I am going to go to the best school of pharmacy in the country or not. And that was my choice. I end up getting admitted. I graduate. And the best thing about pharmacy that I have learned along the way is I think people have this one idea of what does it mean to be a pharmacist. But pharmacists have thousands of different jobs, and the knowledge and the skill set I have as a pharmacist has allowed me to apply that knowledge to supplements, to foods, to essential oils, to meditation, to yoga, to overall health and wellness practices that I think allow me to be a voice that inspires people to create their optimal wellness instead of simply relying on pharmaceutical agents to put band-aids on all of their problems.
Ooh, I like band-aids to all the problems. Nice, awesome, awesome.
Thanks, we did it. I was nervous there for a minute. So be brutally honest, and I do this for my own improvement, and I do it for our audience's improvements too, because one of the things I think that's critically important in public speaking and writing and whatever is to recognize that you are always a student. So as a speaking coach, what feedback and advice would you give me about the story I just told you on this impromptu basis?
Of course, overall, I would say you're really incredible as a speaker, Lindsay. I didn't want to make it too hard to give you turnip, because I remember from Tony's show that you were a pharmaceutical executive or in that space. So I threw that. But there's two things that you could have done that I think will really add a lot of value. The first thing, and I might have done it myself, by the way, so that applies to me. You want to make sure when you're presenting virtually that you keep your eye contact on the lens, even if you have no clue what you're going to say next. This projects confidence. So when you do this, "Oh yeah, and I went to pharmacy school," and you're showing your audience that, "Hey, by the way, this part, I have no clue. I have no clue what I'm going to say here." Right? But if you keep your eyes on the audience, you say, "Billy and Joel went to go to this party and did this thing, and you have no clue what I'm saying next. I have no idea, but since I'm maintaining eye contact, it doesn't show that," right, from the audience. Second thing is reordering your stories. Mm. So what you did is you applied your storytelling in a chronological order. This is what we call setting the context. So you didn't do it like this, but this is a general example of what this sounds like. "Let me tell you a story about how I did this and achieved that, and I went to this school, and then I achieved this." What I would have done if I was you, if I only had a minute, is I would have started with the end or some the most interesting part of that story. So for example, for me, was when you got admitted to the top pharmaceutical school in the country, right? So you could have started something like this. Like, for example, I'll give you an example of what it means to dive. So this is when you open your mouth instead of saying, "So this is what's happening." Instead, you dive like this. "I was sitting in a dark room awaiting for the most important interview of my life. 5,000 pharmacists or rather potential pharmacists apply for this role, and only 7 people get selected or something. And as the woman I was in Alabama, I asked myself, why would they ever pick me? Why would they ever choose me? And then I heard a buzz, and it was my turn to interview. In your life, when challenges come your way, most people run away. But if you care so much about your dreams in the same way I have, which was option 1, get into the best school in the world, and option 2, don't do it at all. Do the things that you're world class on. So I pulled myself together. I stood up and I walked into that room knowing that I was going to get admitted. And I did. And that is the lesson. So that way you dive and everyone's just like, holy jeez. So that's what I would have done.
I love it. Such amazing advice. Before we go, because we are unfortunately running out of time this afternoon, I would love to know, you know, you're here, you're public speaking, you're teaching people how to be more confident on stage and on screen. I'm sitting here when you said you got to keep maintain eye contact with the lens. I'm like, I've got 3 lenses and I'm trying to look at you. We all back up and make excuses for our mistakes. But what is your bigger mission? What advice would you have to someone who's sitting there and going, there's no way I can tell this story, or there's no way that I can change the world? Because I firmly believe we all have the ability to change the world. What is your overall mission and vision, and what advice would you give to our listeners?
Absolutely. So the vision is simple, Lindsay. I realized 6 months into Master Talk, and once again, I thought it was a stupid idea when I started this YouTube channel. I was in my mother's basement making videos. Who would listen to me? But after I realized the mission, which is the following, Dale Carnegie was born in the wrong time period of history, where he had all this amazing knowledge, all these great books, but he's never guested on a podcast because podcasts didn't exist back then. He mm-hmm. never had a YouTube channel because YouTube didn't exist back then. We don't have the best public speaking resources from the best way to teach it, which is, you know, through podcasts and through videos. And so my goal with my life is to be that person in the modern era. How can I create video resources that last far after I'm dead? Mm-hmm. That is essentially what the goal of Master, to live in a world where everyone can share their ideas in an authentic way, in a powerful way, so that we can all share and realize that all of our ideas matter and we can move society forward a lot faster, because we don't know who has the great ideas. It's everyone, by the way. That's spoiler alert. So what's my advice for people? I always like to say things that most people don't say on podcasts. So here's my advice. The advice is be insane or be the same. If you want to be like everyone else, that's totally fine. But if you want to do great things in life, especially if you're 48 minutes into this podcast and you're still listening to us, the only advice that matters is the following. The people who do great things are the people who take the path that nobody else wants to take because it's too crazy. Take me for an example. Don't you find it odd that a 22-year-old started a YouTube channel, not on vlogs, not on pranks, not on comedy skits, but on public speaking and communication tips? Then the following year, he went to coach a lot of CEOs of companies, a thriving coaching practice, but at the same time, still lives in his mother's basement, is literally talking to on the mattress he sleeps on, doesn't own a car, dances alone in his basement for an hour a day, and karaoke's in 8 different languages. Does any of these decisions make any sense at all? Brendan, you're a grown man making so much great financials. Like, why are you still living with your mom and all that stuff? And that, my friends, is the point. If every single decision you make in your life makes sense to the only person that matters, which is you, you're probably making the right decision. So be insane or be the same.
Well, you heard it here, here first, listeners. Head to mastertalk.ca to learn more about Brendan's coaching. And please go check out his YouTube channel. He drops new videos every Sunday with topics along the lines of 5 common public speaking mistakes and how to present to an audience that you have never met. I have loved talking to you today, Brennan. Thank you so much for coming on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Of course, it's been my pleasure, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited to tell you, podcast family, that Thinks, your favorite period-absorbing underwear, is launching activewear. That's right. As of January the 12th, 2021, you now have period protection even when you head to the gym. Now, if you've listened to the show, you know that Thinks has been absolutely life-changing for me. I'm going on over a year of only using Thinks for period protection. And now there is an activewear line that features cycle shorts, training shorts, leggings, and leotards with the signature Thinks period-absorbing layers built right in. They come in three cute colors: black, kale, and heather gray, and they come in sizes between extra small and extra large, and plus sizes are coming later on this year. That means that whatever resolutions that you have made this year, you can tackle one tiny habit at a time. Whether it's yoga, stretching, being at the gym, working out on home equipment, or simply walking down the street after a workout at the gym, you can now feel confident because each of these products is there to be used either on its own or as backup depending on your flow. The training shorts and leotards hold up to 5 tampons worth of menstrual flow. The leggings, which I have a pair of and absolutely love, hold 3 regular tampons worth, and the cycle shorts hold up to 2 regular tampons worth. Best of all, the leggings and the cycle shorts come with heating pad pockets. So if you're working out somewhere that it's cold outside, you can simply slip in some pocket warmers to stay warm throughout your entire training session. Period active wear is here, and all of the essentials you need, no matter what kind of activity you're doing, is there to give you the protection and the comfort that you need to have an active period. If you want to get started with some of the active wear or any of the other Thinks period proof absorbing panties, go ahead and head to www.shethinks, that's shethinx.com/Lindsay Elmore, that's shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore, to save $10 off of your first order. Your workout activity on your period has never been better. Shop now, shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore. When I was in the 4th grade, I entered my first ever speech competition. And I am the kind of personality where I'm very much in my own head a lot of the time. And it sometimes led to problems in my everyday life where I would basically forget to tell my mom, like, hey, mom, we got a speech competition coming up, or like, hey, mom, I need a costume for this like major theatrical production that I'm doing, because I kind of, and I still to this day am this way, like if it's in my head, I kind of assume that it's in everybody else's head, which is something that I work on because I know that's not true and I know that's not reasonable to think about. And so I call my mom and I say, mom, there's a speech competition tomorrow and I haven't planned anything. I don't know what I'm going to speak about. And my mom says, well, then I'll bring home some stuff from work and you can give a speech about that. So my mom comes home and she is a post-operative and perioperative nurse. And she works for surgeons that primarily focus on breast cancer. And so she brings me home all of this literature about monthly self-breast exams. She brings me home literature about the difference between mastectomies and lumpectomies. She brings me literature about who has breast cancer and how do we know where the prevalence is. Is it exclusively in women or can men get it too? So many different pamphlets. And I sat there and almost naively as a 10-year-old was like, okay, sure, I'm giving a presentation about breast cancer tomorrow. And my little 10-year-old self walks into my fourth grade classroom and gives a presentation about breast cancer and about why we need to be aware of it and who gets it and what populations are the most at risk and how can you in your everyday life prevent it. Looking back, this is remarkable to me that as a fourth grader, I not only showed up and gave the presentation on breast cancer, I also won the competition, went to the state level and competed there, and ended up, I can't even remember, maybe getting an honorable mention or something. I didn't win, but I showed up and gave a speech about what could have been a very taboo topic. And what was most impressive was that I walked in and just intrinsically by my own nature had command of the audience to the point where I didn't deal with snickering in the back of the room. I didn't deal with anybody asking absurd questions that were not meaningful for the discussion. And again, looking back on it, I see how remarkable that is. It's remarkable on many levels. One, that my mom said, this is what we have, and we're going to make the best of it. And you're going to go in there, and you're going to do your very best that you can with the circumstances that you were given. Had I taken a step back and said, well, I could give a presentation on anything that I want, but this, I didn't give it enough time. And so that was a learning lesson for me. Like, if I really want to do what I want in life, I have to advocate for myself earlier and in advance of everything else. Just kind of being like, does this fall into place? I don't know. I have to be present enough to say, I need these things in order to achieve what I want to achieve. It was also remarkable because I just commanded the room. I just commanded the room. And I think this was the first time in my life that I had a gift of being able to talk. Now, I've told you before, my voice does not come naturally to me on every level. It does on some level. And I think that this is one example of it. But it doesn't come on every single level. There are times that I have had to take a step back and learn and grow and become a very highly trained speaker. But this was one of those moments where I walked in with such command and such gusto and such just, I am here and you will listen, that the whole audience just listened. And I also recognize now, which I didn't recognize then, the level of maturity that I must have had to walk into there and with confidence start talking about breast exams and breast cancer to an audience of 10-year-olds who probably wouldn't need this information for many, many years down the line. I think about it now and I wonder, because I ended up giving this presentation probably 10 times over the course of 2 years because speech competition, this came up and then that one came up. And once you've got a good thing, you don't really change it. And I recognize now and I wonder if anyone who heard that in any of the many audiences to which I gave this speech, did it make a difference? Did anyone go home and say, hey, you know, you're at risk for breast cancer and there's this thing called breast self-exams that can help reduce your risk of being diagnosed with cancer. And if you are diagnosed with cancer, it can reduce your risk of having a more advanced cancer. I certainly hope so, as I hope that all of the actions that I bring to the world help someone in some way. So if you've never done it before, a monthly breast self-examination is very, very easy to do. All you have to do is remove your top, remove your bra, stand in front of the mirror, and expect both breasts for anything that has changed. You want to look for discharge in the nipples, any puckering, dimpling, or scaling of the skin. Then you're going to raise your hands up and overhead, clasping them behind your head, looking again for any changes to the contour, any dimpling or puckering. And you should be able to feel your chest muscles slightly tighten a bit as you are looking for evidence of breast cancer. Then remove your hands from the back of your head and place them onto your hips and bow slightly forward towards the mirror as you pull your shoulders and your elbows forward. So you're creating a C curve in the back. And you're also, again, looking for discharge, puckering, dimpling, or any scaling or anything that looks like it has changed. Then you can either get into the shower or lie on your back. You're going to place one arm behind your head. So if you start with your left arm, raise your left arm behind your head. Using three or four fingers of your right hand, explore your left breast firmly. You're going to start under your armpit and move down and up and down and up, and perhaps moving across, backwards and forwards. Gradually work towards the nipple, ensuring that you are covering the entire breast. Pay special attention to that area between the breast and the armpit, including that armpit itself. Why? Well, that is because that is where the lymph nodes that immediately drain the breast are located. So you may not feel a lump in the actual breast, but if you're feeling a lump under the skin, under the armpit, it still may be a warning sign that you need to go in and either get a mammogram or thermography. A lot of women choose to avoid mammograms these days, but if you're not going to do a mammogram, at least consider doing thermography. So you may not be diagnostic for breast cancer, but at least you know something is there. Once you've gone in straight lines up and down the breast and perhaps across the breast, repeat in a circular motion so that you're moving from the outside of the breast all the way in towards the nipple. You're going to then repeat that on the other side. So raising the right arm behind the head, then take 3 to 4 fingers and explore the right breast thoroughly, including the area of the armpit and the skin between the breast and the armpit. Next, gently squeeze each nipple and look for any discharge that may come out. You can then repeat these steps lying on your back. So if you are lying on your back, place your right arm over your head and a pillow or a folded towel under your left shoulder. So we're essentially expanding the chest so that the left side of the chest rises and the right arm goes behind the head. This flattens out the breast and makes it easier to examine. Use that same circular motion and repeat on the left breast and the right breast. Please do remember that the larger your breast, the more challenging a monthly self-breast examination may be. Take your time, don't get in a rush, and what you're feeling for is any abnormalities that you go, this is not normal, this is not the way that my breasts normally feel. The second thing that you're looking for or feeling for is any hardening. If you feel something that feels like a frozen pea, that's something that should be reported to your physician right away, especially if it's bigger, if it's larger. This can be something that is potentially life-threatening that is relatively easy to treat as cancers go. I am not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying that it is something that should not be taken seriously, but I am saying, as cancers go, if you catch breast cancer early, it can be treatable and it can be life-saving. So put it on your calendar, monthly self-breast exams every single month, and remember, your first presentation can be a great indication of where you may go in the future with your presentation skills. On the other hand, if you completely botch a presentation, recognize that you do not have to allow that one presentation to define you. Take steps to become a better public speaker. Because when you take steps to become a better public speaker, it not only helps you to become better if you're in front of a large audience, but it also helps you to have easier conversations in small groups. So whether you take a class or join a group, practice, prepare, know your audience, use your tools such as PowerPoint and emphatic pauses with strategy. Know what you are presenting, what platform you're presenting on. Presenting on a podcast is a completely different skill set than presenting on a stage. Presenting in a small group of executives when you're trying to get a promotion is completely different than giving a presentation to your child's PTA group. The more experience you get, the more that you watch others, and the more that you involve the audience by asking them questions, creating eye contact with the audience, can make you sound like you are an in-command speaker who is fully engaged with the audience. Focus on individuals within your audience. Walk around. Take deep breaths. Ensure that throughout your presentation that you have prompts when you know this is the time when I'm supposed to be in this place. Start with a bang. Finish with a meaningful call to action. And dress the part. If you want to command the attention of your audience, dress in a way that commands respect and denotes that you are there to give them an amazing presentation. Practice your articulation. Practice rolling with the punches if a baby cries or if someone has a question that you weren't expecting. Take it all in stride. And after you're finished, ask for feedback. And humble yourself and allow the feedback to make you a better public speaker. The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Kelsey Lorman. Production design, sound design, and editing is by Jive Media. If you have a question about this or any other episode of the podcast, send us an email to hello@lindsayelmoreshow.com. And hey, since you're still here, take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And while you're at it, go over and follow us on Instagram @Lindsay Elmore Show. This helps us bring the pod to more people.